So, today I'm honoured to have on my show a woman who's a teacher at Princeton University in the US. She was born in Johannesburg, South Africa. She's written 14 fiction books, including Dreaming for Freud, Becoming Jane Eyre, and Cracks, which has been made into a film starring Eva Green. Her works are featured in the New York Times, the Oprah magazine, and she's been included in the Best American Short Stories. She's won many prizes too. She is Sheila Kohler, and she's written a book called Once We Were Sisters. Hello, and welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you for having me here.
It's an absolute pleasure. So a very warm welcome. So the book's about your sister and opens with a tragedy. Can you tell us why and what happened to your sister?
Well, it remains a mystery, yes. I don't think anybody will ever know exactly what happened, but she died. Her husband was driving the car, and it was a dry night. There was no other car in sight, and he went off the road. He was a heart surgeon and a steady hand, so not a drinker, and went into a telegraph pole. He was not killed. He was wearing a seatbelt, and she was.
She wasn't wearing a seatbelt.
She was not wearing the seatbelt, and she was killed. There'd been a history of battering, too, before this, which she had told me about very reluctantly, as so often happens with these battered women. Mm. So she would always cover up for him and try, you know, to say, well, this happened to someone else, and sort of fictionalize what had happened to her. I had sort of put together the story, yeah.
So you say, I mean, I'm going to cover secrets. So people are secretive. Do you think it's society? Do you think it's her pride? Why can't people talk about domestic violence?
Yes, I don't really know the answer to that either. I think there is some kind of shame involved. I think women are shameful very often when they're put in a situation that's absolutely not their fault in any way. One thinks even of, you know, women who are raped, you know, and that they seem to feel that it was their fault in some way. And perhaps she felt that way. So she tried to cover up. And then there were societal reasons. Basically, her husband was a big heart surgeon. And when I said to her, she told me this story about discovering him with another man in the midst of a party that she had given.
Were they making love in a secret
room?
Yes,
on the floor. Yeah. And she came in and was so terribly shocked. And she told me as though it had happened to someone else. And she said, what would you have done? And I said, well, I would have kicked them in the balls and called the police. And she said, oh, but she couldn't do that because they would have been thrown off the doctor's rolls. So she was thinking of his reputation. She was, you know,
also had five children.
Yes, six when she died.
God.
Yes, so there were these children to think of. And that was my mother's point of view. And so much was done for the children. A lot was done just to preserve this image of a father, a positive image. And he was, in many ways, he was a big heart surgeon and very successful, very handsome, and probably...
Did people like him? I'm interested in his character.
I think there were many people who did like him, people who worked for him or grateful patients. He was very good with post-operative care. And his daughter, for example, told me, you know, these two conflicting stories. One, that he would cry if he lost a patient, particularly a child. He would weep. On the other hand, he was capable of taking up a winch on a boat when his own child had not, you know, was not able to handle it. And, you know, a winch was made of steel and just hitting her across the head so that she was thrown across the boat unconscious.
Now, yeah. The children did live with, that he beat them up regularly, didn't he?
Yes, he did. And that was something that my sister didn't tell me. And that she covered up for that. It's a mystery. How could such a thing? I'm sure he would, you know, apologise and, you know.
Now, let's go back to your childhood, because obviously you both actually suffered from low self-esteem, I'd say, in the way that you both made kind of bad choices in your men. You know, And I think that could have been partly to do with, you know, your relationship with your father. Let's start with him first.
Oh, yes. Well, we lived, you know, this kind of beautiful existence in a way, in a beautiful house and garden and swimming pool and tennis court.
Very wealthy, I'd say.
Yes, well, in South African, I mean, my father would say that he had managed to buy this whole estate for £1,000. I don't know if that was true or not. But anyway, it was a beautiful existence with this lovely garden and everything and sunshine. And at the same time, this was the apartheid period in South Africa. So there was sort of underground stream of violence. And we as children were very aware of this. I think children are aware of injustice. So we saw these people around us who we loved and who took care of us and who were the ones who, you know, made our beds and our food and carried us on their backs. Were not treated as human beings. So there was this kind of violence that was going on in our existence all the time. And nothing was ever said. Everything was always, you know, you did not say if you were hurting in any way. You had to cover up, you know, stiff upper lip. Perhaps it came from the English tradition.
I think so. I think it's about being respectable, isn't it?
Right.
So you never show, you know,
right.
I mean, it's all about face, isn't it?
Right.
It's all about
Absolutely.
Looking right in society.
Right.
But then that kind of came into families, so you couldn't even talk to each other.
Right.
But your father was 20 years older than your mother.
Right.
He? So he died when you were quite young.
Right. So they lived at the other wing of the house, so we didn't really see them very often.
Very English aristocracy.
Yes, sort of. They would come and say good night and occasionally we saw them in the morning at breakfast or something. But so he was off, and they actually left us for 18 months going on a timber buying trip. And that seems inconceivable, you know. We were 7 and 9 or even younger, 6 and 8 or something like that. And I actually found the letters from my father later in my life. And there were these letters that he had written to his two little girls. "My darling girls," he wrote. But then there were letters that you would write to an adult. Mm-hmm. He had absolutely no conception of what you would say to a child. So we very rarely saw them. And then he died, you know.
He died immediately when he came back.
Right. Were so young. And he was like a myth. You know, my mother preserved this myth for us. Your father was so brilliant. And those were the happiest years of my life, she said. Those 11 years that she was married to him were the happiest years of her life. And maybe they were. Who knows? She had a glamorous existence.
Now, she did very well, didn't she? Because she kind of married money.
Right.
Didn't she?
Yes, she did. Mm. And so there was that mystery. Was she actually in love with this man who was so much older than she was? And I have some photos of her sort of leaning against him where, I don't know, now later in my life I look back on it and I think perhaps she was in love with him. I don't know. But anyway, he was very good to her and then he died, yes.
You also found out that she'd harboured the secret that she'd been married before.
Right, yes, and that was something that she announced to us when we were 12 and 14. So she was extremely secretive. She had eloped with this Jewish man who was also in the diamond world, who'd been working with her father, and they went off down to Kimberley. And she told us that that her parents had come and they had annulled the marriage. And I sort of doubted it didn't seem possible. But I think it actually was. She wasn't of age.
Yes.
So it really is quite possible. But what she didn't tell us, too, was that she actually spent 9 months in Kimberley. So I put 2 and 2 together and presumed that there was actually a child that had resulted from this abortive
marriage. Yes, why 9 months and why a rushed marriage? Fascinating.
So,
now, your mother also was dysfunctional the way that she drank a lot, didn't she?
Yes, she did, I'm afraid. Mm. So that was very disconcerting to us. And again, because perhaps if someone had explained to us what was happening, it would have been sad, but we would have at least known what was going on. But we would just see her change. And so we were very small, and I had this sort of idea that a witch had come and taken her place. And, you know, the fear there is, of course, that you too might become a witch. Yeah.
So this all made you incredibly close to Maxine, your sister. Like you were, you sound much closer than even normal sisters to me.
Yes, because there was no one else, right? Mm. So we had this secret language and we had these secret games that we played. And of course, when I got sent to boarding school and we went very young, then we were separated. And that was very hard because she was in the senior school and I was in the junior school. So we were separated. And then later in life, I married and went abroad, and she stayed in South Africa. But we would meet in these various places.
Yes, you had such fun. I mean, I was really impressed because you were quite clever. You always said, we got rid of the kids and we had fun together as sisters. And you did glamorous things. You went to Italy, you went to Paris, you know, you went shopping.
Yes.
You ate well, you went to galleries. I was like, you know, you did enjoy yourself.
We did.
I was impressed.
We did. We had moments when we could get away and abandon our children, I confess, and go off on our own hunting for art. We were both very interested in art, and I did a degree at the École du Louvre, and I got an art degree there. So we went on a sort of treasure hunt, looking at, you know, Romanesque churches and going down through France and eventually to Italy too. So yeah, we had a lot of fun.
But you both got married very young, and also you were trapped in an unhappy marriage as well.
Yes.
Can you explain that?
Yes. Well, I married this, he was extremely young too. He was a student at Yale. I was 19. He was 20. Yes. So yes. And then we had these children together, and then he fell in love with someone else, and he was of Russian origin, and he presented it to me in a very Russian way. You know, I feel so guilty. I feel so terrible. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And I really felt very sorry for him. I did. And I was very sorry for myself, too, of course. And then struggled with this, and he would keep saying, well, I'm just going away for the weekend, but I'll be back. And I, perhaps like my sister in a way, kept hoping. Hope can be a very dangerous emotion.
But also I found it very intriguing that you confided in the mother-in-law, and she was actually, you found out she was double-crossing you, wasn't she?
Yes, she was talking to him and reporting, I presume, what I said. Yes, she sort of was pulling the strings in the background. Yes, so foolish. When I look back on it, it's hard to even conceive.
But I know when you have young children, where do you get the strength? Where do I go? You know, that's the question. How can I leave this person? You know, it's such a big... People say, oh, just leave them. It's like, how? You know?
Yes.
Especially if you haven't got support networks. I think that is the thing in life. You
know,
your mother was South Africa. You were in France. You know, your other sister's away. It's like, where do I begin?
Yes. But living in a foreign country, it's true. It's very... And also, we had sort of grown up together because we got married so young, and I really discovered the world through him in a way. You know, French literature is very brilliant and very fascinating. And together we had also an intellectual life, which was very important to me.
Yes, so he kind of helped with your sophistication, didn't he, coming from South Africa? Yeah, because he was very sophisticated.
Yes.
Now, I just want to say one point that I read in the book, which really shook me, and that's at the beginning. When a woman who was an ex-girlfriend of Carl, who married your sister Maxine, rang up her up and said, whatever you do, don't marry this man.
Yes, no, that absolutely happened. And she told me about it. And she said, well, maybe she was... I said, well, why do you think this woman came to you? At the time, I didn't take it that seriously. You know, it's always hindsight that is so wise. She said, well, maybe she's jealous. Maybe she doesn't want me to marry him. Or, you know, she came up with various explanations. But I wish that the woman had actually come out. I don't know what she knew, but she should have said it straight. Once again, silence.
I also want to say one more thing. So you say you've written 14 books of fiction, but you admit that nearly every heroine in your books is your sister.
Yes, absolutely. I've written again and again, well, about sisters in Becoming Jane Eyre. This was obviously the story of three sisters and dying very young. So that was very interesting to me for that reason. And then my last book, Dreaming for Freud, was I tried to give a voice to a young patient of Freud's his first patient that he wrote up. Her name was Ida Bauer, actually, and I had the feeling reading her case history that it was Freud who had decided what she felt and thought, and not really what this young girl might have said. So I want to give her a voice. And at the moment, actually, I'm writing a book where I'm using a character in Crime and Punishment. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember Sonia, the young and perfect saintly Sonia, who is a prostitute. And Dostoevsky doesn't really give her a voice, I don't think. So I'm trying to write from her point of view and explain what she might have felt in the situation that she's put in.
And do you think that's a way of working out your feelings about your life and your sister's life and how you could have done it differently?
Yes, I suppose trying to give her a voice, writing to her. It's a book written to her, really, and just wishing that she could read it or be with me to read it, keeping her alive in a way.
And do you have any message for someone who may be experiencing domestic violence out there?
Yes, find friends, find people outside the home, because I think very often these men isolate their wives. And I know it was my sister's case. He even had a detective follow her if she dared to go out, and she had to be home for lunch. So he kept her very closely controlled. So don't isolate yourself. Get out, find people, find someone who will help.
And there is, you can talk to.
Yes, and there is today. I mean, things have changed, fortunately. And so there are places to go, I think. Yeah.
Sheila Kohler, thank you so much for coming into Radio Gorgeous and telling this moving story. Once Were Sisters is published by Canongate. Thank you so much. And it's published tomorrow, which is February the 2nd, 2017. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure talking with you.